Permítame saludar al autor del libro. ¿Cuál sería la traducción en español del libro, Ana?
Sacred Oath, Julio. Yo creo que la traducción exacta sería juramento sagrado, pero vamos a ver una cosa. Mire, Sacred Oath, según su amigo Cuco, es juramento sagrado, juramento sagrado.
Bueno, vamos a hablar con él de ese libro. El juramento sagrado. La primera pregunta que debo hacerle antes de hablar del libro, Ana, que es nuestra razón de la llamada, es preguntarle, ya que él trabajó y se fue, trabajó del lado de Donald Trump y se fue, si él está viendo factible el regreso de Donald Trump a la Casa Blanca.
Good morning, Mr. Esper. Thank you very much for your time today at W Radio. And
thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being with us. Before we begin speaking about your book, Sacred Oath, we want to ask you, due to your time with the Trump administration, do you see viable that Donald Trump comes back to the White House in 2024?
Well, it is certainly possible that he may run again. He's suggested that he may, but it's unclear at this point in time. I think for the Republican field, we'll know much more after the midterms and probably early in the next year who actually will run in 2024 for the Republican nomination. And, you know, clearly if Trump runs again, he will freeze out probably a number of persons on the Republican side. So I think that's the big unknown that many people, some people want to see and others are concerned about.
Es posible que se lance nuevamente, él lo ha sugerido, pero en este punto no está claro. Lo vamos a tener mucho más claro después de las elecciones y, digamos, a inicios del próximo año. Ya sabremos si Trump se va a lanzar o no, y eso va a tener al Partido Republicano un poco dividido, porque hay algunos que lo respaldan y otros que a los que les preocupa.
¿Qué fue lo que pasó? ¿En qué momento él dijo, yo no puedo estar en este lugar?
What happened, Secretary Esper? At what point did you decide I cannot be part of this administration anymore?
Well, the divisions between myself and President Trump began early in my tenure in the summer of 2019, as I describe in my book, with regard to various issues. But they really reach up the peak in June of 2020 when the president, in a meeting on June 1st, presses me to deploy 10,000 troops to Washington, D.C. to suppress the protesters, and then, of course, suggests that we shoot them in the legs. And so at that point in time, look, I knew that we were at a different point, at a different level, if you will, and at that point in time, it became, I felt, my duty to make sure that I got the country, I served the country and make sure that I got the institution to the election, you know, without it being politicized, without any abuse of the military, and without any, you know, other things that I thought would be outlandish or wrong, if you will.
La división entre ambos se vio presente en el verano del 2019, como él describe en el libro, con muchos problemas que tuvieron, pero digamos que el pico se alcanzó en junio del 2020, cuando el presidente y él tuvieron una reunión en la que pidió 10,000 tropas para ir a Washington, D.C. a suprimir las protestas y sugirió dispararle en las piernas a los manifestantes. Entonces ahí se dio cuenta que estaban en puntos distintos, si se quiere, en niveles diferentes, y tomó la decisión de servir al país y seguir a sus creencias y dejar la administración.
Imagínese, dispararle a los manifestantes a los pies. Ana, yo quisiera preguntarle sobre el capítulo de Alex Saab. A él le tocó toda la operación de Cabo Verde cuando arrancó el proceso de Alex Saab. Pero hay algo que yo no entiendo. Si Alex Saab ya estaba colaborando con Estados Unidos, ¿por qué se complicaron las cosas?
It's a subject in your book that is of great importance to our audience, and it's the Alex Saab case. You had to witness all of the Cape Verde arrest and all of that. And our question would be, if Alex Saab was already collaborating with the United States, why did you guys go ahead and proceed with the arrest? I mean, well, support the arrest of Alex Saab.
Well, my focus on the entire matter was not on the legal end of it. My concern was principally focused on ideas being proposed by others within the administration to use the military, and I would say misuse the military in a means to make sure that that the government at Cape Verde were able to maintain control of him until the legal processes, whatever they were, and I was not involved in all that, that those could work themselves out in a way that the Department of Justice wanted to pursue that.
Su foco en el tema no estaba en la parte legal, sino más bien en las ideas y en las propuestas de usar militares por parte de algunos sectores que querían mantener el control, digamos, de Alex Saab mientras se transcurría el proceso legal en Cabo Verde. Él no estuvo involucrado, digamos, en todo el proceso legal, sino más bien cuando se llamó la atención de esa propuesta de usar militares para controlar la presencia de Saab en Cabo Verde.
Grace, el tema de que si era o no un diplomático, yo quiero preguntarle porque en el libro, en el capítulo de Alex Saab, él habla de que el tema de Saab, en vez de manejarlo con temas, pues, barcos de guerra, él consideraba que tenía que manejarse, pues, a nivel policial o a nivel diplomático. Yo quiero preguntarle, ¿él considera que Alex Saab era un diplomático del gobierno venezolano? A bit more about this subject, Secretary Esper. Among the things that you mention in your book on this case, you say that the Alex Saab case should be dealt by police officers in one scenario or by diplomatic means. And it's very important for his case, the part about diplomatic. Do you believe that he was a diplomatic of the Venezuelan government when he was arrested?
Well, I'm not going to comment on any of that. I was not briefed in terms of what all the ins and outs and details and that. So I'm going to I'll stay away from that. Again, my focus is on the use of the military to support law enforcement with regard to his holding at Cape Verde.
No, nos dice que no va a comentar sobre eso porque él no conoce los detalles del tema, así que se va a mantener al margen de dar cualquier comentario al respecto. Su foco, y repite, es el uso de los militares para apoyar a las fuerzas de la ley para que se mantuviera en Cabo Verde.
Lo que se ha revelado en el informe del Congreso sobre Donald Trump y su experiencia personal trabajando con el expresidente Donald Trump, ¿él cree que hay un posible caso judicial contra el expresidente?
Based and now going back to your time with the administration Trump, everything that's been revealed in the last few weeks from the January 6th committee, do you believe that it's possible to have a judiciary case against President Donald Trump? This is just based on your opinion, understanding that you were not part of the administration when the violations, when the attack of January 6th happened.
Well, I've only seen parts of the first hearing. Otherwise, I've been, working or trapped on airplanes at airports like many other Americans here these days. But I think that question is the big question that everybody's asking is, will the Department of Justice pursue some type of case against the president or others in his inner circle? And, that's the big unknown, is will they do that? Under what circumstances? Has enough evidence been pursued? Now, clearly, we know that there is the political case being made against him by the January 6th committee. And then, of course, we understand, or I've read that the DOJ is conducting its own investigation. So I think those are going to play out along different and parallel paths and with different outcomes, I suspect. But who knows? But that is the key question right now is what will the Department of Justice do?
La gran pregunta es qué va a hacer el Departamento de Justicia. Nos dice que no ha tenido la posibilidad de ver las partes del caso, solamente lo puedo ver el primer día porque ha estado trabajando muy ocupado en aviones, en aeropuertos. Así que la pregunta grande es con el Departamento de Justicia si va a perseguir el caso contra el presidente u otras personas cercanas a su círculo. Eso se desconoce en el momento, pero hay que mirar bajo qué circunstancias lo harían. Sabemos que hay un caso político en el comité del 6 de enero en el Congreso y hay otras investigaciones paralelas que se están haciendo de diferentes frentes, pero lo más importante es conocer qué va a hacer el Departamento de Justicia al respecto.
Él estuvo casi todo el mandato de Donald Trump, primero en la Armada, después como secretario de Defensa. ¿Por qué esperó tanto para salir de la administración?
You were with the Trump administration for a long time of his four-year tenure, first in the Army, then in the Secretary of Defense. Why did you wait so much to leave the administration?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of your question.
Why did you wait so long? Why did you wait so long to leave the administration?
Well, I didn't leave on my own commission. I was fired in November of 2020, a week after the election. And the reason why I stayed, of course, as I talk about in my book in the early pages and have talked about interviews since then, is I thought that as long as I was able to advance important initiatives at the Pentagon, whether it was modernizing our military, refocusing our strategy on Asia, China specifically, helping our service members and our families, doing any number of things that would be really help us win in the 21st century, then that was made it important for me to stay. Second, I thought as long as I was in a position to stop bad ideas or to reshape outlandish ones and, avoid what I would call the politicization of the military, the misuse of the military, and so on, that I thought that given my singular position, one of only two in the United States government, the other being the president, that has the ability to deploy U.S. military forces, then my higher duty to the country was to stay and not to leave because, of course, you know, leaving early would have been easy for me. It would have been a lot simpler. It would have saved me a lot of grief and heartache and everything. But I thought the higher duty to the country was to stay and continue to push along those two lines.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Mark Spear, for your time in W Radio. And good luck with your book, A Sacred Oath. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye bye. Bueno, nos dice que a él lo despidieron en noviembre del 2020. Él se quedó porque quería servir al país, quería seguir avanzando en iniciativas en el Pentágono enfocados en Asia, específicamente en China, y ayudar y ser útil para esos asuntos importantes en el siglo XXI y también parar de pronto esas ideas que consideraba erróneas o reformarlas, acabar o parar con eso que él llama la politización de los militares y el mal uso de los militares. Y en esa posición de poder desplegar o tener esa autoridad de desplegar militares que tenía también el presidente, pues él sintió que su deber era quedarse y no irse. Irse temprano era el camino fácil, eso le hubiese evitado muchos dolores de cabeza, mucha presión, pero él decidió seguir aportando en el país.